Yes, I need me some money so I can lend a helping hand.
Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable and who are panel discussion for this Friday, the 26th. It's a rainy day. It's a good old-fashioned rainy day, and we hear the rain just hitting the roof, and it sounds great. So, good morning. Welcome. Very nice to have you with us. We have a terrific panel. Let me introduce everybody. Reminder, you can get in and share your thoughts with us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Well, look who's here. Judith Enck joins us once again. She is a senior fellow and visiting professor at Bennington College, founder of Beyond Plastics, and former EPA regional administrator. And on this Arbor Day, joins us once again. You've been off for a while. You're back. We missed you a ton.
Oh, it's great to be back. I've been all over the place because you know how accountants are busy around April 15th? Well, Earth Day.
Environmentalists are busy on Earth Day?
Darn Earth Day. So I've been from Buffalo to Brooklyn, from Catskill to Canandaigua. I've been everywhere.
Except, doing the tour.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Living the dream.
Glad you're in Albany this morning.
Me too. Thank you
very much. Dan Arizari joins us. He is chairman of Capital District Latinos. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. It was a little bit challenging getting in this morning with all of the road spray but and one wiper blade biting the dust, but nevertheless, I am here.
Well, you made it, and we're thrilled. Thank you. Mike Spain, who I contacted extremely early this morning asking if he could fill in, and he answered my call immediately, which is so sweet of him.
And are we lucky?
He is the
I happen to be up and looking at my computer.
Good thing you're an early riser.
The former associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. Good morning, Mike. Thank you very much.
I'm happy to be here, Joe.
We'll mention that both David Soares and Aaron Pacitti are off this week, but they will hopefully be back next week. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Hello. I'm just, we had a call this morning saying, are there still seats left for the Pete concert, May 3rd, Friday night, coming up. It's going to be great. Happy Traum, and he's going to come on and talk to us during the week next week.
Week from tonight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be terrific, and we'll all be singing together. WAMC.org or 1-800-323-9262, all for the lockbox. And I have to say, I mean, I don't want to appear mean, but yesterday we had Rich Honan on the air. Now, I don't agree with anything that Rich Honan says.
Breaking news. Well, we love Rich.
But do you defend his right to say it, Alan?
I not only defend it, but I need it. I think it's terribly, terribly important. If we're going to call ourselves a panel, if we're going to call ourselves a democracy, and you know what they say, people say, is, we'll get a real conservative. Oh, come on. Every time we ever had anybody, they always say, get somebody else because this guy doesn't. Ladies and gentlemen, we're not fascists. You know, we want to hear what other people have to say. It's what makes this program interesting. And Joe, you're to be complimented for making sure that we do have that kind of balance. I appreciate it.
Well, and thank you. I must say, though, you know, and I'm not, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school, but, you know, Rich comes in and nobody's getting any, you know, nobody's getting paid for this, of course. And then Rich comes in and,
what?
I know. Sorry, Dan.
We used to give bagels, but we cut that out.
No, I got one this morning. There are some in the newsroom. But anyway,
I'll be right back.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I beg Rich to come in. And then everybody's really, really mean to him. And then it takes me like a good 3 weeks to talk him into coming in again.
Oh, that's why the gaps,
so,
right?
You know, yeah, we had a good thing going. And then people like sort of bothering him at work and different things. And I just, you know, that's not necessary.
He's a tough guy, though. He holds his own.
Oh, he certainly holds his own. But he's also, he's been a dear friend to us for 2 decades.
Yeah.
He's a lovely,
no
lovely man.
Mean.
And he's very, very sweet.
Well, so he's a human.
Yeah, and so we
you know, and he does remarkable volunteer work helping young entrepreneurs in the technology field. I mean, he's really widely respected in this region, and he brings in a perspective that is provocative and makes the conversation quite interesting, I think, when I'm listening.
Yeah, I like, and what I always find out it was when people, they start yelling at each other, and then I'm like, oh God, I wonder, you know, do I need to help somebody get to their car after the two have been yelling? And then I realize they're in a corner making a date for lunch so they can talk It'll be like Rich is going out with people to talk, you know, over the issues. So,
if I may, Joe, there's just one more thing.
Of course,
Yesterday, we got a note from somebody saying, Alan talks too loud. You know, his microphone is louder than the others. So I know that our crack engineering department will make sure that that is not the case.
Yeah.
We'll make sure that it's not the case.
I saw that note and I just sort of dismissed it because I didn't agree with it. Like, I think we all sound just about right, at least in my headphones.
Oh, well, yeah, that's the thing. You're wearing the headphones, so you can tell.
Yeah, I can tell. You're in there. Okay, well, good morning, everyone. It's very nice to
good morning.
No, we're going to get letters,
Judith. This could go on for a long time.
All right, let's get started. We have a lot to talk about. So our big story is yesterday had sent out a whole bunch of stories as possible suggestions, and I didn't have Biden on it because we had talked about Biden the day before, but then I just mentioned at the beginning of the show that Joe Biden had just denounced, and then that's all we talked about yesterday. So then I thought, well, okay, we're probably done talking about Joe Biden for a little while, and then there was the New York Times Anita Hill story, and I thought, oh, well, we can't not talk about that. So let us begin there. The New York Times reports, they did the very smart thing, which was contacting Anita Hill. I will say that I'm sure a lot of other news organizations tried to contact Anita Hill. Having been a news organization in the past who has tried to contact Anita Hill, it is not an easy thing to do, but they got through. So Joe Biden knew that Anita Hill was going to be an issue for him. So a few weeks ago, as he prepared for his presidential announcement, he reached out to her through an intermediary and arranged a telephone call hoping to assuage her. It did not go how he had hoped. On Thursday, the first day of his presidential campaign, the Biden camp disclosed the call, saying the former vice president had shared with Ms. Hill his regret for what she endured 28 years ago, when as the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee he presided over, the confirmation hearings in which she accused Clarence Thomas, President George Bush's nominee to the Supreme Court, a lot of commas in that sentence, of sexual harassment. But Ms. Hill says the call from Mr. Biden left her feeling deeply unsatisfied. In a lengthy telephone interview on Wednesday, she declined to characterize Mr. Biden's words to her as an apology. So she said she was not convinced that he has taken full responsibility for his conduct at the hearings or for the harm he caused other victims of sexual harassment and gender violence. She said she views Mr. Biden as having set the stage for last year's confirmation of Justice Brett Kavanaugh. This was actually the one line in this article that I wanted to kind of bring to the panel of how you feel about that. Who, like Justice Thomas, was elevated to the court despite accusations against him that he had acted inappropriately toward women. And she added she was troubled by the recent accounts of women who say Mr. Biden touched them in ways that made them feel uncomfortable. I cannot be satisfied by simply saying, I'm sorry for what happened to you, said Ms. Hill, now a professor of social policy at law and women's studies at Brandeis. I will be satisfied when I know there is a real change and real accountability and real purpose. Judith, would you like to start?
Sure. She's absolutely right. I think the phone call is 28 years too late. I mean, I think Biden said he could have handled the hearings better. Remember, he was the chair of the Judiciary Committee. There are three other women who wanted to testify that they had a similar experience with Clarence Thomas as Anita Hill did. And Senator Biden at the time would not allow that testimony. I think that really sad period in our history, which, by the way, we got Clarence Thomas still on the U.S. Supreme Court, did set the stage for the Kavanaugh hearings. And I really respect Anita Hill for saying, you know, this really wasn't an apology. This was, you know, kind of obvious. He's going to announce for president. He wants to tell the world that he called her. Big deal. I mean, he could have called years ago. And I think the most important thing is Anita Hill mentioning that she wants sexual harassment and gender violence to be part of the policy debate in this presidential campaign, which I think is welcomed. Now, the difficulty for Biden is if he starts speaking out on that issue, Trump, who is much, 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 much worse than Biden on this. But, you know, Trump has that ability to take his biggest weakness and turn it on his adversaries. And I cringe to think what the Biden-Trump debate on gender equity and sexual harassment is going to sound
like. You're worse.
I mean, it's impossible to know the answer to this question. But if Joe Biden had called her, even if it was 28 years too late, and then called her and said, look, I know I'm running for president. I know this is going to be an issue. But I just want you to know I'm deeply, deeply embarrassed and sorry for what I did. Do you think it would have played differently?
I think it would have played differently, but I also think waiting till a few weeks before you announce for president is very, very suspect.
Especially since it had been brought up 8 years ago. I mean, whenever he ran, it was an issue around there.
He chose not to really address it. And also, you know, people get impressions of elected officials. It wasn't long ago that I was on this panel debating, you know, the problem of Biden touching and sniffing women's hair. I want to go back, play the tape back a few weeks ago. We were having the debate about how bad that was. And then remember, he was then speaking to a union in Washington, D.C., and joked about his inappropriate behavior a few times. So I think he still doesn't get
it. A little
it.
Tone deaf?
Yeah,
just a little.
A little. And I'm fearful. And look, I Biden versus Trump, of course I'm going to support Biden. But I think this is going to be a problem for him on the trail, along with, you know, right out of the gate, he's doing a fundraiser with
Comcast
and a bunch of lobbyists.
Yeah.
David Cohen, the head of Comcast, is sponsoring a fundraising event for him. You know, he's free to raise money wherever he can. But within the Democratic Party, things have moved on. You know, there is a decision by some candidates not to court lobbyists for campaign contributions. And there is a priority among many of the candidates, not just the strong women running for president, that you gotta get the Anita Hill issue right, and he did not get it right.
So only just because I think everybody at home is keeping score on all of us. do you have a preference in this presidential primary, Judith?
Not yet. I mean, there are 20 candidates, and I'm waiting.
21, I guess.
21 now.
Yeah, I thought he made it 20, but who knows?
Yeah, I thought he made it 22.
I will at some point, but I'm still watching. You're probably guessing I'm not a huge Biden fan. Because of also not just Anita Hill, but recently how he's handled these issues.
Well, I can't disagree with a single thing that you've said here up to now. However, I honestly believe that Biden is the one who can beat Trump. I think the others cannot. And we'll get mail on that, and I'm sorry. That's just my opinion. He's centrist enough to get the purples and the people, you know, in the middle. And therefore, I think, you know, Anita Hill will probably by the end of this campaign have to make a decision as to whether or not beating Trump is more important than making the point, a very important point.
I think also we have to be conscious of the fact that the Republicans are watching all of this and they are taking notes and they are figuring out how to split the Democrats. There's going to be guerrilla warfare. They have an incredible machine already, digital machine that was successful in identifying voters in the last election. And they are going to be, and of course, the Russians are still, you know, an X factor in all of this.
They're on the ballot,
right?
Too.
And so, what I fear is what Barack Obama said, the circular firing squad issue. Democrats have a history of hand-wringing and a history of, you know, doing kind of well, what should we do next, and hand to the brow, et cetera. And that's really going to play into somebody like Trump, who has already mastered the ability to divide the American citizenry. And that's and listen, there are really existential issues at play here.
Like climate change.
I
think that I'm not so much worried about the circular firing squad, because that's the very definition of the Democratic Party. What I think is a deeper issue is Democrats need to decide, are they campaigning to win over Trump voters or independents who didn't vote, or are they campaigning to support younger, more progressive voters and bringing them into the voting booth? Because these are two.
Can you do both?
I don't think you can do both. This is the fundamental choice. Are you going to swing right to get the Trump voters, or are you going to organize really, really hard to get the younger, more progressive voters and get them to turn out? And, you know, Nate Silver had some analysis this week about, you know, the people who are turning out at much higher numbers are younger voters who are really good on LGBT rights, who care about climate change, who are just dying with student debt. And I think, you know, the candidate that tries to do both is not going to succeed. I think you have to pick your lane.
Then how come you find Biden so far out in front of the others? In that very polling you're referencing.
Well, because he has such a distinguished career, I think, you know.
Name recognition?
And some people are saying, you know, he's too old. I actually think having experience is a good thing. I think he's a front runner today. I don't think he's going to be the front runner in 6 months.
Dollar on the table.
Yeah. I'm in.
But, you know, we were all, you know, 4 years ago or maybe a little later than that, sitting here just completely convinced that there would be no possible way that Trump could ever win the primary.
Well, at this time, 4 years ago, we were saying Jeb Bush was the presumed nominee.
It feels like that right now about Biden. People are sort of assuming he's out in front, he's just going to coast. And there's a lot of feeling, on my part, it seems very similar to Hillary Clinton. Almost, you know, now he's stepping forward to take the
coronation
crown that he deserves.
Heavy as the
and
crown.
He'll just run.
I want to get back to something that Alan mentioned earlier, and both, well, Judith mentioned it too, about, we're going to take a break, but as far as the fundraising of going to the money and of him saying that, making the point to Politico of that he really needed to make a splash in the first 24 hours, and what weakness that shows. Well, we will show to his campaign. We will show, talk about that when we come back right after the short break. Right before we went to the break, we were talking about Joe Biden and the fundraising aspect, and something that was reported in Politico that he had a conference call the day before he announced, so that was Wednesday, for his announcement on Thursday, that it was very important of what those numbers were in the first 24 hours. We don't have numbers yet, but this, looking at this New York Times article from 2 days ago where he said he's going to have to raise money like he's never raised before, with Mr. Biden now planning to enter the 2020 presidential race. According to three Democrats familiar with the preparations, one of the anxiety-inducing questions hanging over his team of advisors is just how much of President Barack Obama's record-setting financial operation Biden will inherit now that he is setting off on his own. It is an urgent task, especially for a politician not previously known as a prolific fundraiser. His leading rival in the Democratic Party, Senator Bernie Sanders, has amassed $26.6 million across his various political committees, including more than $10 million left over from his last campaign and from his reelection in Vermont. Mr. Biden begins at zero, and it would take his raising money more than $100,000 every day until Christmas just to match what Sanders has banked since the start of April.
Well, Governor Cuomo has said he's going to use his financial networks to help Vice President Biden do fundraising, and I think that certainly will help him.
But of course, Judith, you're right. But of course, Cuomo is suspect for the same reasons that Biden is, in that he takes money from the big boys.
Right, and he has a lot of money, but that'll give Biden a leg up. I'm curious to see if Biden will do what many other candidates has done and said he won't take money from the fossil fuel industry because of concerns about climate change.
Well, I think the rationale will become, look at the money that President Trump has already amassed. Mm-hmm. And we don't have time to get into disputes over whose money is clean and whose money is dirty. I won't be influenced by it unduly, and I need that in my, everybody might say that, or many may say that, but Biden is of that that generation where you take it from whoever gives it to you.
As someone once told me, the problem with tainted money is they're tainted enough of it.
I like that.
There's also this one line in this article in the Times where it says, for Mr. Biden in particular, it threatens to cut against a middle-class Joe image that is central to his electoral argument and appeal. Mr. Biden enters the race already facing wariness from some on the left that he is a political and policy moderate with deep ties to money donors and big companies, many of which are incorporated in Delaware, his home state. So how do you say I'm a man of the people when you're getting the money from, as Alan said, the big boys?
I'll tell you how you do it, Joe. You say it.
You have Comcast host your first fundraiser.
You just say it.
All right. We have letter.
I think Americans worship money. And I worship the people who have it. Maybe not the people who listen to WAMC. I think that there is a sort of a respect for it. You don't see it harming this guy who's in the White House right now. So he's the leader. Here's what troubles me about this. He's the leader right now. And the press and everybody else are going to try to take the leader down. That's the way that it works in this thing. That's what happened to Jeb Bush, who we have talked about many times. I like Biden, and I think he's a decent guy, and I think he could beat Trump. I'm not so sure about anybody else who's running.
Do you think he can win the Democratic primary
process?
No,
I think there's a very good chance. Here's what I think. If Biden gets to the election, he will win. He'll beat Trump. But I think there's a very good chance that Bernie Sanders is going to be the candidate nominated by the Democrats. He's way out in the polls. He's showing that. There doesn't seem to be, a lot of people thought he was old news. He turns out he's not old news. The same people who were for him before are for him now, and they have a loyalty to him. So I think the real problem for the Democrats, maybe Bernie gets the nomination, he gets 45% of the vote or almost 50% of the vote, and Trump wins again.
He's not going to get the minority population vote. That's one of the big problems I see with both candidates, with both Biden and with both Bernie. And if those folks stay home, Alan, like they did last time, it's over.
Will his vice presidential choice, would either of their vice presidential choices mitigate that, Dean?
Who knows? I mean, sure, if the candidate, who is it, Stacey?
Abrams.
Stacey Abrams.
If Stacey Abrams were to join Biden, there's no telling. Yeah, that would energize the black community. But
question
is,
who else would it energize? I mean, I'm all for her. I think she's terrific. Also, I think Kamala Harris is much more likely to get the nomination.
But I feel kind of disingenuous when I say that, almost, because there's so many strong women running. Mm-hmm. And why aren't we talking about them in the same way that we're talking about Joe Biden?
Buttigieg.
Well, I know it's a rhetorical question, but I mean, it should be posed.
No, it's not rhetorical. I mean, these are really qualified, capable women. You know, I love the observation that Pete Buttigieg, is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Buttigieg.
Is so well respected for reading so many books. Well, Elizabeth Warren has written 11 books. Yeah. You look at Elizabeth Warren and Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris, when they take the stage, they are so well informed. What?
I said 2 out of 3.
They are so well informed and ready and working. And the new guys, Buttigieg and Beto, are like, oh, they have charisma. I mean, there's just such a different standard by which women candidates are judged.
There is a different standard. I mean, it goes right back to if a woman is too smart, she's wonky and boring, or if she's too aggressive, she's pushy. you know, mm-hmm. where
or likable enough. Yeah. And it comes back to our earlier conversation with how Joe Biden handled the Anita Hill hearings. There was not one woman on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
That's right.
And
that's
right. And later, Biden knew that was an optics issue. And after she was elected, he recruited Dianne Feinstein. But if you even had one or two women voices on that panel, rest assured the Anita Hill hearing would have been held differently.
Absolutely.
I want to go just to Dan for a second before we go to letters. There is an article in The Hill today about Latino community grassroots organizations are concerned that Democratic presidential candidates will overlook them, leading to a missed opportunity to mobilize what is expected to be the country's largest voting minority in 2020. A new report by the Latino Vote Project, a coalition of progressive pro-immigration groups, argues that community organizers are best equipped to reach Latino constituencies through outreach efforts like phone calls or canvassing than traditional Democratic campaign consultants who may have little in common with Hispanic voters. Hispanic voters are set to become the country's largest voting minority, with 32 million projected to vote in the presidential election.
Yep. So I totally agree with the need for taking the Latino voting community seriously this time around, maybe.
So, as you were saying a moment ago, as Joe Biden is, you're not going to get the minority vote. So, who will get that vote? Who could get that vote? Who can court that vote?
Let me restate that. I think that there has to be outreach. Whoever you are, you need to have a machine that's geared up to turn out the vote. I mean, let's take a look just at Florida, for instance. Florida was lost by the Democrats by, what was it, 1.9% of the vote, right? So if you think about it, if they had galvanized more of the, let's say, the Puerto Rican vote, who, mm-hmm. you know, have landed in waves in Florida, would that have made up the difference? Could that have made up the difference? Maybe so. But if you suppress the minority vote, which is about, I don't know, 26% of eligible voters somewhere along that number, then you have a serious problem. And I think when you talk about, you know, patriarchy and white patriarchy and, you know, the usual suspects always getting nominated, there has to be some kind of an effort made to kind of outreach to those people and give them a reason to vote, because they sure as hell, didn't have one last time around, and they stayed home. So if I were whoever the candidate is that ends up with the nomination, or if I was the DNC, I would be pitching a tent, several tents, a legion of tents in the Latino community, and working with those grassroots organizations and finding out how we could mobilize the vote, certainly in Florida and in other cities where the vote is going to make a huge difference.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll go to letters, and we will move on to other topics after that. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
She's my baby. She's my baby. Can't you see?
Listening to John Primer and the Real Deal Blues Band playing at the Linda tonight at 8 o'clock. Linda.org for more information. TheLinda.org. Alan has letters. We'll go there.
Okay. We heard from Jody, who says, agree with Alan. Good morning, panel. I agree with Alan that Biden is the one to beat Trump. I remember the Anita Hill hearings well, and they were deplorable. However, that is history. We need to move on from focusing on the past and think about the future from this moment onward. If any of these younger people who are running get to be Biden's age, they'll have skeletons in their closets, too. Biden's moral character to date far outweighs Trump's. There's no debating that. I hope the Democrats don't shoot themselves in the feet over this issue. And that's from Jody in Sheffield. And then we heard from Paul, who said, no to Joe. What Joe Biden did to Anita Hill has changed American history. Clarence Thomas is a cancer in the Supreme mm-hmm. Court. Biden's gift to the financial sector, not letting bankruptcy discharge student debt, is another further blow to America. Just say no to Joe, Paul in Williamstown. And then from Carlita, apologies and nice women accepting them. Biden was counting on Anita Hill being a nice lady and accepting his gesture as an apology, which just goes to show how clueless he is in his old school manhood. We have been too nice too long, us women, and throwing us a bone will not do anymore. Biden's apology, in quotes, was not sufficiently articulate and did not place him in the position of vulnerability that that a listener will understand the term in the context better than my actual comment. Carolita from Kingston, who writes a bit. Neil says, acting strategically. We here in the bluest states have to get over ourselves and for once act strategically in the general election. Our votes do not matter. New York, Massachusetts, California will vote against Trump, no matter which Democrat is nominated. Our task is to help nominate someone who can appeal to the more moderate voters in states like Wisconsin. Fantasies like Sanders' instant Medicare for all can wait. Trump must, in capital letters, be defeated if this country is to survive. And that's from Neil. And then Eileen says, too little too late. Joe can't seem to wholeheartedly apologize for his behavior. Have you seen his poorly produced videos? By the way, I want to just stop there and say I think the video was terrific. So I didn't think it was poorly produced at all. Not sincerely apologizing. Hard to understand how his PR people can't get it right. Calling Anita now and saying he is sorry for what happened to her simply adds insult to injury. I'm sorry to say Biden is not the right choice for our next president. Alan may be right that he could beat Trump, but we deserve better. Too bad Anita Hill isn't running. Yes, we need anybody but Trump. No doubt. Too bad Joe couldn't get it straight. And that's from Eileen. That's what I got, Joe.
Did you want to weigh on anything?
Well, I just think many of the Democrats have a good chance of beating Trump. I don't think it's just Biden. I think it's a strong field. I wish there weren't so many. I thought it was interesting that Joe Biden, who I know I'm sounding very anti-Biden. I'm not.
I think you
have to look at the full context of his career, but hard to overlook the Anita Hill situation. I think that was a real test of leadership. But I also worry that Biden. Yesterday he said he asked President Obama not to endorse him. Well, that doesn't pass the laugh test. You know, Obama said he wasn't going to endorse anyone. And then Biden saying, I'm in this race because only I can beat Trump. If he felt that strongly, he should have been in the race, last cycle.
Well,
I know he didn't want to go up against Hillary, but here's what we can all, I think, agree upon with Trump. Trump's not surprised us. We knew how dreadful he would be when he was a candidate, and he's turned out to be a dreadful president. But if Biden felt so strongly that only he could beat Trump, he should have run 4 years ago or 2 years ago.
I mean, in fairness, there was the personal trauma of losing a son.
That is an excellent point.
Yeah, and in fairness, he didn't know that he could beat Hillary, and that would have divided the Democratic Party. I was never a Hillary fan, as you all know, and made it clear. Nevertheless, I've certainly voted for her. And what really bothered me about so many people I know, including many of the people listening to this radio station right now, is they said, we're not going to vote for anybody because we don't like anybody. There are always choices to be made, mm-hmm. folks.
Yeah.
And you know what the result of that kind of thinking has gotten you. Okay, so then there were some more letters. You want them, Joe, or not?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay. William says, Biden kicks off campaign with hoax. Using Charlottesville hoax as the centerpiece to launch his 2020 campaign, Joe Biden has hit a new low in a long, unremarkable career. After decades as a U.S. Senator and two-term VP, he has no achievements on policy to run on, only cries that Trump is a racist. This unpersuasive strategy will be the focus of Biden's empty campaign, and that's from William, who I do not agree with. What can I tell you?
Well, Biden does have an impressive record outside of the crime bill and the Anita Hill hearings. I mean, he was a real leader on gun control and, ironically, other women's rights issues. He just couldn't really operationalize it when it really mattered.
Does he need – I mean, I agree with Alan. I think the video was inspiring. You know, it made you feel very patriotic and
Yeah, I do. Yeah. You're talking about the campaign.
The yesterday. Campaign.
The one that I think the listener was referencing was the video that he did in his apology video that was
That was the worst video
that
ever.
That was bad. I think that was the one she was referencing. But
right, the parsing, the sort of, you know, refusal to acknowledge, well, I did anything wrong.
Sitting on a leather couch, not a good look. But to your point,
Well, we have a leather couch.
Well, it was just the informality of it. No tie. You know, people interpreted it this differently. Sorry. It wasn't sincere.
Yesterday's video. The campaign video
was great. Yes.
But does it... Are there any new ideas? I mean, are there any... What's he going to do? You know, I mean, what's his plan? America has changed. It needs... The U.S. needs leadership into the next, you know, this century, and I haven't heard what he wants to do except make things good again.
That's true with a lot of people, right? I mean, there are many
Buttigieg doesn't want to talk specifics, just values.
There's time. I mean, they'll all say, and Biden will say, and Buttigieg has said, there's time.
Isn't it, and I'll ask Alan this question, but it seems to me, what struck me, I thought the Biden video was great because he seemed to be the only person who was saying, look, because I don't feel the Democrats say this enough, we are going to be just harshly damaged if we continue down this road of Trump. And there was that moment, that Charlottesville moment was the moment for Joe Biden where he said, okay, this is beyond what we can accept as Americans.
I believed it. I thought it was compelling.
I thought that was compelling. Mm-hmm. And my question to Alan is you know, I don't think in these videos you have to come up with your entire platform in 3.5 minutes, do you?
No,
I mean, you show yourself different from the guy who's running for re-election.
I agree. And I think what will happen, I mean, for me, I mean, I'm waiting to see what the specifics are that he and Buttigieg and Beto O'Rourke and everybody else has. Some have stepped forward. Elizabeth Warren has put out policy papers that nobody's read.
But she's also been running two months longer than the other candidates. Alan.
I agree. I agree with everything you're saying. I do think that we have to keep it simple. I mean, I really think we have to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And simply put, this president is the worst president this country could have ever imagined. Right. Just can't get over it. Right. How we did this, and when I say we, I mean we as a country put this scoundrel into office, and now we have to live with it. He's a liar. He's a cheat. And probably he's a crook.
And he's undermining all of the institutions that we hold dear as a nation.
Absolutely.
On a daily basis.
So you got to make it clear. And then you have to have somebody who will articulate a simple choice. It's him or me or him or us. And I think that's why Biden will be good, because he's a man with gravitas. He's a man who is, simply put, and I only hope he avoids being a wise guy, because when he tries to do that, he's terrible.
Well, or he always does it, though. He's a risky candidate. I mean, once a week, he's going to say something really inappropriate.
Yeah.
He is. That's
compared
his
MO. To what, though? That's what.
I mean, that's compared to what? That's a double standard.
Yeah,
though,
when
right?
you compare it to Trump,
well,
I mean, what can he possibly say?
Of course.
No,
so that's what we're talking about.
I was thinking other Democratic candidates.
You know, people who support Trump have already. Don't acknowledge. We've already forgotten or forgiven or accept that he's been the way he is. If Biden commits these faux pas that you're talking, these weekly faux pas, which he's capable of doing, what will happen is turnout won't be there, enthusiasm won't be there.
Right.
The kind of campaign that he would need to propel him to the White
House. And when you're looking at a guy like Trump. And when he says something really stupid, really dumb, really racist, really whatever, his people look up and say, yeah, so that's just him.
They love it.
They
love it because many of them are racist themselves.
Good morning, roundtablers. I don't like the snide comment Bernie made in his initial tweet about Joe's entering the presidential race. I agree with your panelists who commented on that the focus of the campaigning should be to get rid of Trump, period. Every candidate has to raise a lot of money, so get over it. Get over it, comma. Bernie, you do the same thing. Comcast, Momcast, women, men, black, white, who cares? Let's get rid of the monster in our midst and then worry about the details like global warming.
I hear that.
Daisy writes today, actually, Bernie has hit a ceiling and his numbers are starting to drop per Nate Silver. And Elizabeth, I know I keep beating this drum, is slowly starting to be noticed, particularly by young people and women of color. And that's from our friend Daisy.
I think she's right. Mm-hmm. I think there is a little bit of, I mean, I think she's been at it so long that she's eventually going to break through in some, I feel, in some way.
You have to show me more.
Yeah.
No, the truth. I like her. She's my senator.
Yeah.
She kissed me. And all I, and, well, and as far as I'm concerned, that,
seals
you know,
it.
Did a lot. How
is there an apology there somewhere?
However,
let's leave that in the lockbox.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Admiral says dollars. How about Democratic contenders get free publicity by making great stories and displaying enthusiastic crowds? And that's from Addie. All right.
You know, one thing also that hasn't been mentioned is that the faith part of this. I think Buttigieg mm-hmm. brought this whole argument mm-hmm. about faith to mm-hmm. the fore in a mm-hmm. way that I've been waiting for a long time for the Democrats to talk about. And Joe is someone who can really speak to that as well. Not in some kind of fake way or some kind of whack job way, but in a way that really makes sense and I think that touches people because of everything that he's been through.
Yep. Okay, and Peter says, Alan, wrong. Alan, he cannot win.
Wrong.
Number one.
John McLaughlin.
Alan, he cannot win. One, too old. Two, when you open your candidacy to the phrase of moral equivalence, you automatically alienate a gigantic swath of the country who don't have the education, the money, or the patience to be, as one might interpret, talk down to. That kind of language works when speaking to the choir, otherwise known as the DNC. With the opening, he has already lost. And this is Peter from Southampton. And then Karen, Biden entering the primary, couldn't we just welcome Joe Biden into the race as another voice among many and then let the voters decide? All the endless speculation and parsing of his strengths and weaknesses seems unproductive. Sorry to say, but you guys spent way too much time handicapping the Dems and not enough on the other real news. Example, Trump's complete and unusual refusal to comply with any request from Congress. We have three branches of government. Where's the balance of power the founders envisioned? Well, Karen, I think you're a little wrong. I do think we've talked about that on this panel. We will continue to talk about it on the panel.
And tune in next week, right?
Yeah. No, she's right. She's right. This is terrible. We had Collins, was the guy's name, saying yesterday, the congressman saying, we're going to pursue this with everything we have in our power. And if that means people are going to go to jail,
yeah,
they're going to go to jail.
From Rhode Island.
And as I said on an earlier commentary today, you know, there's that point at which that the guys who are getting subpoenaed have to decide whether they want to go to jail, risk going to jail, and leaving, because this president is not going to pardon them. He's not going to help them. He'll probably end up firing them. That's the
way
it is.
Yeah, I mean, the nation wants to hear from the likes of Don McGahn and
Robert Mueller,
and,
maybe.
Yeah, definitely Mueller and dreadful Steve Bannon. And I'm fascinated that President Trump outsourced firing Jeff Sessions to Corey Lewandowski, not even on the public payroll, and Lewandowski wouldn't do it. I mean, I think televised hearings, whether they're impeachment hearings or not, having these characters come answer questions is so important, and Trump
agreed.
Knows that. And so I think Congress has to exercise their responsibility. They have to issue subpoenas if they're ignored, contempt of Congress, and then maybe jail.
Okay, I just want to say one thing, because we do get some mail on this. There's Steve Bannon, the guy you're characterizing as being a bad guy, and then there's Steve Bannon, who's the best selectman that Great Barrington has ever seen.
Oh, that's Steve Bannon.
I just want to make that clear.
Wow, change your name, selectman.
Yeah, work on something else.
Steve.
There was a Seinfeld episode about that.
Yeah, that's right.
He should use his middle initial or something.
Let's take a break. Look at that. Okay. Let's take a break. We'll be right back after this.
When I was a little bit boy, about the age.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Dan Irizarry, and Judith Enk making up the panel this morning. We have a lot of letters and a lot of Biden talk, so we're going to go through this batch of letters, and then we'll go into a bonus round and quickly go through all the topics that we want to discuss, everything from cats to coal ash.
Ryan says, Biden, hopefully Biden will make a thoughtful vice presidential pick if given the chance. He's, however, the only candidate that I see who will win over some of those who voted for Trump. In doing so, I see that as garnering two votes. Listen to Alan. That's from Brian. I like it. Listen to Alan. Ed says, to win the Democratic nomination, Kamala Harris.
Yeah, you guys.
Ed says, early prediction, to win the Democratic nomination, Kamala Harris for president, Mayor Pete for vice president, or vice versa. But to win the presidential election, Biden for president, Amy Klobuchar, moderate Midwestern woman for VP. And if Biden wins the election, Andrew Cuomo as AG. Most other candidates, Harris, Warren, Booker, et cetera, presented cabinet posts, but Kirsten Gillibrand, who turned on Biden 2 days ago as secretary of BOPCUS. You don't want a literal translation. Secretary of BOPCUS, in other words, nothing. Don't look it up. Raphael says, missing this candidate, when you mentioned strong women, why are we not hearing Amy Klobuchar, who really struck a chord with my family? Isn't she someone who could earn those same votes as Biden? She impressed me to pieces dealing with Brett Kavanaugh, and I like her can-do attitude, minus offering pie in the sky. She is a worker. Love you guys. And Rachel says, I disagree with you, Alan. Well, at least you can spell my name right if you disagree with me. I do not think that Biden is the one to beat Trump. I think he's too much of an establishment Democrat that our party is trying to get away from. It seems like it would be a repeat of Clinton versus Trump. Biden is an old white man that everyone knows and already has controversy surrounding him, which is bad news. I am 32 years old, and I know many of my friends are searching for more progressive candidate. And that is not Joe Biden. Also, where your money comes from does matter to the voters today. Mm-hmm. The reason Trump won is because he was something different. Something different. He didn't take money from the established candidates. Come on.
He self-funded, right? Didn't he?
No. Many of my friends who initially voted for Bernie in the primary voted for Trump in the general election. We are sick of the same old politics, and Biden is the same old. Rachel from Montague.
Well, that's an interesting line. So they voted for Bernie in the primary and Trump in the general.
Yeah, that did happen.
That's the Bernie bro.
The one thing about Biden, if he were elected, I think he's somebody who could deal with the Republican leadership in the Senate. Mm-hmm.
There won't be a Republican leadership in the Senate.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but if whoever's elected, if it's a Democrat, and the Democrats take control of the Senate and retain control of the House, if they don't reach across the aisle and include and somehow, you know, put out an olive branch and include the Republicans opposite of what is going on now, they are missing the opportunity to heal this country.
All right. And Maureen says, thank you. Thank you for discussing the blatant sexism in all the discussions of the Democratic candidates. It drives me crazy. Hillary won the popular vote. With all the young people becoming energized, I truly believe a woman could win in 2020. Elizabeth Warren is my choice. And then we heard from Peter, who said, hola. So which of the Democratic candidates is fluent in Spanish? It just might help. Peter from Norfolk.
Buttigieg.
Castro.
Castro.
Oh, that Castro.
And I think
Cory Booker.
And Cory Booker, I was going to say, yes.
Fluent.
Biden did do an alternate version of his announcement in 3.5 minutes in Spanish, right?
Oh, like Michael Bloomberg Spanish. That was always very painful.
That was painful.
Well, we would like Trump just to speak English. That would be a start.
And there you go.
And Jeff said, fundraising. Good morning, panel. Fundraising was not a factor in the last presidential race. Hillary buried Trump in funds amassed. Jeff from New Paltz.
All right. We have entered the bonus round. Are you all ready?
I'll take cats for 200.
Cats for 200. The cat story is a fascinating one. Let us begin there. This is Dateline Australia. This is just, I say it's fascinating. It's really quite awful.
You don't want to get into trouble, right?
That's right. So what this is Australia is deadly serious about killing millions of feral cats. 2 to 6 million feral cats are roaming, and the way that they're thinking about doing this is are these frozen sausages.
They're not thinking about it. They're doing it.
Well, right.
Toxic sausages.
Toxic sausages made with kangaroo meat, chicken fat, and a mix of herbs and spices, along with a poison called 1080.
It's like rat bait.
Right. And the baits would also be lethal to other non-native species like foxes.
Or children.
Mm. Yeah, there's that.
There is. There's always poisoning, pesticide poisoning.
Now, you know that our bird expert, Rich Guthrie, he's death on the cats because the cats kill the birds.
Well, the cats are doing a huge amount of ecological damage in Australia. Don't send me letters. I'm not advocating this, but there is a reason.
Is there a public health? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is there a public health purpose?
When Libby Post was on the roundtable a few weeks ago, an issue about cats came up, and she was going to travel to central New York to argue against a cat extermination program that a town was considering, and the opposite is to capture the cats and to
euthanize
but basically to neuter them and put them back in, and over a period of time that has a substantial impact, and it's much more. But I guess if you have
it's
2 million cats across Australia, it's a lot of neutering.
Continue, Joe.
Okay, you want to go on to the next issue of...
That's it? Well, wait a second.
Go ahead.
Are we all sure that everybody's had their chance on this one, whether or not killing all of these cats is a good idea? Because, you know, an awful lot of people own cats in our listening area.
Yeah, but you read the recent survey that said that dog owners are much happier than cat owners. In fact, people who don't own any animals are happier than cat owners. That's what the survey said.
Well, I believe that to be true.
Well, I don't like killing anything. I don't like killing humans. I don't like killing animals. I don't like killing... What?
Do you eat meat?
Well, yeah.
Well, then.
I do. Well, I said, I don't like it.
It's not for sport.
I don't like it. But I don't know what you do in those...
A good friend of mine got a rabbit for her kids.
Now she has 7.
I think it's a neutered rabbit.
All I can say on the subject is PETA is more than just a bread.
Mm. There you go. were you going anywhere with the rabbits?
No.
Okay. All right.
I want this to end.
PETA is more than just the bread.
I just want this to end.
I see what you mean. Okay, now I get it.
All right.
Take some time. ETA.
The next issue up for bids is coal ash. I know Judith has been working very hard on this issue. This is something that has dominated headlines in many communities across the country.
It's incinerator ash. Garbage incinerator.
Coal.
Not coal.
It's ash.
Yeah, it's ash.
My apologies.
Sorry. I don't mean to jump in. I just
No. Correct me if
fact
I'm
checking.
Wrong.
Sorry.
It was cats though, right?
Yes, it was cats.
Okay.
Good thing it wasn't dogs.
So it's incinerator ash.
Yes.
Okay. So the community members, the Catskill, went to the Catskill Community Center, a huge show on Tuesday about a proposed ash landfill. Okay.
Thank you. So the garbage incinerators that are currently operating in Hudson Falls,
yes,
Poughkeepsie, and Peekskill want to send toxic incinerator ash to an old quarry in Catskill. The company is Wheelabrator, the second largest garbage incinerator company in the world. The quarry is very leaky, lots of water, and it's less than a half a mile from the Hudson River.
Oh, God.
And unfortunately, the Catskill Town Board has not come out against this project. Wheelabrator put out a brochure saying they may offer Catskill $1 million in host benefit to projects to host this. There's strong citizen opposition, and without the citizens, not just of Catskill, but the whole region getting involved, there's a real risk that this will go forward. So we had a great panel the other night in Catskill. There's another meeting coming up a week from today, next Friday, is that May 2nd,
mm-hmm.
At 6 o'clock in Catskill. And this is a classic situation where unless citizens get involved and mobilize, we will have this major environmental threat on the Hudson River.
May 3rd. Friday,
May 3rd. Thank you.
Yeah. Can I ask one question? Other than don't produce it, which is the ultimate right answer, is there a safe or effective way to dispose of incinerator ash?
There really isn't, and that's why this country is actually moving away from garbage incinerators. There hasn't been a new incinerator built in the United States in the last 20 years, except for one. So the more sophisticated the air pollution controls are on the incinerator stacks, the more toxic the fly ash is. And it's,
what an irony.
And also look at the waste stream. In the last 10, 20 years, you have more electronic devices, so there's more heavy metals in the waste stream. When you burn plastic, it produces dioxin. So this is just an all-around really bad idea, and it's quite surprising that the Catskill Town Board to date is saying we're basically going to leave this to the state to decide. And then if you enter the state hearing process, that's like a 5-year soul-sucking odyssey that takes tens of thousands of dollars to, if not $100,000, to fully participate. So hats off to the people of Catskill who showed up, well over 200 folks the other night, and they just have to keep going.
Next up on our lightning round, we go to the issue of the debt ceiling. Top White House officials are imploring key Republicans to move quickly and raise the debt ceiling. Four people briefed on the discussion said concern that a prolonged impasse could raise the chances of a misstep that damages the economy later this year. The requests have taken on new urgency because other budget discussions with Capitol Hill have broken down, leaving policymakers at a loss for ways to avoid a pileup of dangerous deadlines in September that could affect the stock market, labor market, and economic growth. Mick Mulvaney has played a major role. He is the acting chief of staff, you will remember, has played a major role in communicating the desire, and it's shared broadly by many Republicans on Capitol Hill, according to the people briefed in the discussions. And so what do we think about that? The effort appears to be getting little traction so far, in part because some Democrats are insisting that any debt ceiling deal come as part of a package of changes that raises spending levels after October.
So this is going to be a deal. The question is, who pays what? Obviously, this time, the shoe is on the other foot. The shoe is on the Republican foot, and they have to do the begging. The Democrats will say, sure, but first your people maybe it'll be first some of your people have to show up and answer the subpoenas.
But there's a wild card here. Just as he did in December when both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, agreed to raise the debt ceiling this past December, Trump unilaterally tweeted out, no, I'm not going to sign it unless we get our money for the wall. And that, you know what that began. This is all, there's a wild card here.
And there's also disaster relief that's looming out there. And that's particularly offensive for me in terms of the ability to fund some of the projects that Puerto Rico is still without at this point.
Yeah, the hospital in Vieques is still closed.
It's unbelievable what has not been done. And this whole $90 billion figure that Trump got pulled out of his ear, it's just unbelievable what's happening. And I think that might be part of this discussion as well. Not to mention they're going to be running tape of when Trump was arguing the opposite back in 2016 about the debt ceiling, I think it was, where he was basically telling the GOP not to raise the debt ceiling. Should be interesting.
Speaking of, pulling it out of, there was a letter from somebody who obviously knows his or her Yiddish saying that Bubkus is really sheep leavings. Remember we had that letter about Bubkus.
Who knew? Next item on our on our list, what?
I knew.
Oh, okay. Well,
no, I knew I said there's a more literal.
But I didn't know sheep specifically.
Yeah, no, the sheep was something new. I did not know.
Yeah, okay. We go to the Mueller report reaction update. So this is, we're still talking about this. As Democrats agonize, the GOP is at peace with doing absolutely nothing on Mueller's findings.
There were some unflattering things in that report about the president. I admit that. That's what Mike Lee, the senator from Utah, said. But let's move on.
What are their choices? What do you think these guys are going to do?
Tisk adjectives. So brash, inappropriate, unflattering. Only Mitt Romney, who called out the president's behavior as "quote unquote" sickening.
But he doesn't want further investigation.
Right. And he got beaten up quite badly.
Profiling courage.
Yeah, right.
But he doesn't have to go up for re-election for another
2024
or
something like that. Yeah, 2022.
So the Mueller report about the president pressuring senior officials, including the former White House counsel Don McGahn and the former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, to scuttle his investigation. To what Mike was just referring to, I consider this to be basically the end of the road, said Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, who once tried to thwart Mr. Trump's presidential nomination and now serves on the Senate Judiciary Committee, which has the authority to investigate Mr. Mueller's findings.
There was a great column today in the New York Times by a Fordham Law School professor who says, he explains in legalese how there is evidence of coercion even, and absolute evidence of obstruction of justice. And you know, there's a preponderance of truth argument for it, and Congress not acting on it is kind of speaking.
Okay, well, remember.
Let's go to the Republicans who are sitting in the United States Senate right now and say, what are their choices? They can either defend the president or they can get defeated, and they're not willing to do that. They are anything but a profiling courage, and what's going to happen is a great number of them are going to get thrown out no matter what they do in the next election, assuming the Democrats can mount a credible campaign.
I think they're keeping their heads low.
Yeah, and Lindsey Graham is chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Can you imagine?
That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Lindsey Graham.
That's all I got, the end.
That's all I got. That is the end. We're out of time, but we'll end there. We got through everything. That's good. Congratulations, everybody. Nice job. Do you have a plug for us, Judith?
Quick plug. Join me to talk about plastic pollution. It's a community forum in Postinkill on Thursday, May 2nd at the Postinkill Firehouse, sponsored by the Postinkill Democrats.
Wow.
And everyone is welcome.
Pretty rarefied.
plastic pollution in Postinkill. Say that three times.
Nope. Judith, Dan, Mike, and Alan, thank you all so much. Have a beautiful weekend. We'll be back right after this.
Pete.